Hello, friends. Welcome back to Foul Play. In this season, I'm taking you back to the 17th of October, 1989, when this happened in the Bay Area of California.
911 emergency. Upper deck of the Bay Bridge has collapsed on Oakland side. The upper deck of the Bay Bridge has collapsed.
The World Series pregame show was on the air. Then suddenly, it was off the air. Back across the bay, buildings in San Francisco's Marina District had crumbled.
Creighton Sanders is at Candlestick. Creighton, it looks like it has been a scene of panic. What's going on there?
Panic is the right word. It was the most terrifying moment any of us have ever spent in our lives. It only lasted but a few moments.
And to the south of San Francisco, reports of bridges down, homes and businesses destroyed.
But we are not here to discuss the earthquake, the many lives and homes that were lost, and its devastating after effects. I'm here to tell you of another devastating event that happened in Reno, Nevada, the following day. An event that didn't get as much attention as it would have normally, because the news of the earthquake consumed the media for many days afterwards. In this season, I'm bringing you the story of Charles and Jennifer Chaw. This is episode 1, Missing.
As well as myself and Shane, throughout this series, you'll also hear from retired detective Alan Fox and retired detective Ron Dreher.
I'm Alan Fox. I live in Reno, Nevada, and I'm retired from law enforcement for over 30 years. I've worked robbery homicide for 10 years.
My name is Ron Dreher. I went to work for Reno on March 15, 1973. And then I retired on July 23, 1999.
We have been asked to cover this case by Alan and Ron to see if anybody remembers anything about Charles and Jennifer. Always remember, however insignificant something might seem to you, it may be a vital piece of evidence that helps the police to work out what happened. So if you have any information at all, please do come forward. You can contact Reno Police directly, or if you prefer to stay anonymous, you can contact us and we will pass on the information for you. This is a very sad case about two young children who went missing in 1989 and whose bodies were not discovered until the following year. This is a murder case that has never been solved. Please note that whilst we are not including graphic details in this series, we are dealing with children, so this may not be suitable for all listeners. Our story begins in Reno, Nevada, on the 18th of October 1989, the day after the San Francisco earthquake. Charles Char, aged 8, and his younger sister Jennifer, aged 6, never returned home from school that day. Their parents, Anne and Gordon, were originally from Taiwan, but they had moved to the United States in 1978, before the children were born. Alan was able to give us some background on the family.
Before the kids were born in Reno, Nevada, the mother and father came from Taiwan, and they worked their way through, I believe, San Francisco. It may have been L.A., but they eventually find themselves living in Reno and opening a Chinese restaurant back. The children were born in the early 80s. The mother and father eventually were divorced sometime before the children were abducted. It wasn't necessarily a contentious divorce, but there were some issues, as would be in any family that probably had problems. It was alleged that the father had a gambling and drinking problem. After the divorce, he moved to Los Angeles, and the mother stayed and continued the restaurant called Imperial Palace on East 2nd Street in Reno, right across from Harris's at 2nd and Center Street. She had employees, and at the time, in 1989, Charles was 8 years old and Jennifer was 6. So the mother's running the restaurant, and she has her mother living with her, so the maternal grandmother living with her and watches the kids quite often.
So to recap, Charles and Jennifer's parents had divorced in 1987. Their mother, Anne, was still running the family business. Their father had moved away, and their maternal grandmother had moved over from Taiwan to help with the children. Anne, her mother, and Charles and Jennifer lived in an apartment in the Redfield complex in Reno, Nevada. Charles and Jennifer attended Anderson Elementary School. They took the school bus, which picked them up a short walk from their house. They would walk to and from the bus together, as would all of their school friends. Now today we would probably consider these children too young to walk to the bus alone, but back in 1989 this was not unusual. Charles was kind and considerate and always took care of his little sister.
Whenever they saw them walking together, he was always holding her hand. So very protective. He wore a watch. He was always punctual. If mom said, if you're playing in the apartment complex, be home at this time. He was always looking at his watch or something and telling people, oh, we got to go home, you know.
I'm a little older than Charles and Jennifer, but to give you an idea of what it was like where I grew up in England, at a similar age to them, I would leave home in the morning, either walking or on my bike. And my mum would say, make sure you're home before it's dark, or make sure you're home by 5 o'clock. And that was it. She didn't know where I was. There were no mobile phones. She didn't know where most of my friends lived or who their parents were. It was a much freer childhood than many children have today.
Back to the events of October 8th, 1989. Anne was away in Taiwan for a couple of weeks, due back the following day. Her mother was looking after Charles and Jennifer. They got up and got ready for school, as normal, waved their grandmother goodbye, and headed off to the school bus. Their apartment block was in a complex of similar, modern, custom-built apartment blocks, with some communal facilities, like tennis courts and a swimming pool. A lot of the land around the complex was barren, ready for new buildings to be erected. There would be no reason to go there unless you lived in, were visiting, or were delivering to one of the apartments. Charles and Jennifer's normal route from their block was to walk past some of the parking spaces, carports, and a couple of the other blocks, then leave the complex boundary, turn left onto the road, where they would walk less than 100 meters to the junction. And this is where the bus would pick them up on the corner. If they had turned right out of the complex, this was a dead end at the time, so there was no passing traffic. But this day was different to all of those other days, because Charles and Jennifer never returned home from school. Alan picks up from here.
On the 18th of October, the children go to school. They take the school bus. It's just a few hundred feet from the apartment. They go to school, and supposedly after school, they never made it back to the apartment. So the grandmother reports them missing. She goes around the complex trying to figure out, but she doesn't speak English, so she's having a rough time, but is able to communicate enough for people to know what's going on. The kids never show up, and so then the police are called. Now keep in mind, October 18th was when they were reported missing. The day before was the San Francisco earthquake. October 17th, 1989 was the Bay Area earthquake, which was huge. It was during the World Series. I remember it. I was driving down the street in Napa, and I could see the telephone poles just swinging. So unfortunately, the news reports on the missing kids were pretty much overshadowed in most people's mind by this earthquake. The freeway collapse crushed a bunch of people, fires everywhere. Yeah, it was crazy. It happened right during the middle of the World Series. So everybody's talking, and my concern is that people probably heard about the missing kids, but the earthquake is still big in everybody's mind. And it is for quite some time, because they're still pulling bodies out from the freeway and days later. That's my concern, that somebody who may have known something maybe didn't even hear about the story.
Ron was working in homicide at the time and tells us what happened when the call came in.
It was a typical day for us in homicide. Homicide didn't get involved in this case in the beginning. We did not. We have a juvenile section at the time, and because there were children and they were missing, the juvenile detectives got the case, and they went out and started looking. We don't get involved for, gosh, probably several days, and even then, we're not involved, the homicide section, robbery homicide, because you didn't do things like that back then. And besides that, in the beginning, everybody thinks the kids are at somebody else's house. It didn't have the, let's get on this case, let's try and find out what happens, as things have morphed into today's market, where if somebody's missing, we go through a protocol.
Sometimes, there's more to a true crime case than meets the eye. The same goes for your mental health. What might seem like repeated overthinking or unwanted, disturbing thoughts you're scared to share with anyone could all be signs of something deeper, like OCD or obsessive-compulsive disorder. And those habits you rely on to ease anxiety and discomfort, like checking, seeking reassurance, or replaying thoughts, might actually be compulsions. Imagine your brain getting stuck on thoughts you don't want to have, like urges to do something unsettling you'd never actually want to do, or disturbing doubts about something important to you, and constantly feeling like you have to do something, anything, to make these unwanted thoughts go away. But no matter what you do, the relief is only temporary, and eventually, the cycle starts all over again. I know firsthand how this condition can take over your life. I also know how crucial it is to get the right kind of help to break free from the cycle and reclaim your life, which is why I want to tell you about NoCD. OCD is so much more than the stereotypes about liking things clean or organized. It's actually a serious condition that causes people to get stuck in a cycle of stressful unwanted thoughts and repetitive behaviors, which can become debilitating. These unwanted thoughts are called intrusive thoughts. They're usually disturbing or stressful and feel totally out of character. And people with OCD often try to relieve the anxiety from those thoughts with repetitive physical or mental behaviors, which are called compulsions. One of the hardest things about OCD is how misunderstood it is. A lot of people don't realize it's OCD, so they're full of shame and often suffer in silence. Not every therapist understands OCD or is qualified to treat it effectively, which can make it difficult to find the right help. OCD is highly treatable with a specialized type of therapy called ERP, or exposure and response prevention. With NoCD, you can do live virtual ERP therapy with licensed therapists who specialize in ERP and OCD, so they truly understand what you're going through, even the symptoms that feel hard to talk about. NoCD enables over 155 million Americans to access evidence-based treatment at NoCD, covered by insurance. If you or someone you love is struggling with OCD, you're not alone. And with the right care, you can get better. To find out more about therapy with NoCD, go to nocd.com and book a free 15-minute call with their team. That's nocd.com to learn more and book a free call. So Charles and Jennifer don't come home from school when they are expected. Initially, their grandmother assumes they went to a friend's after school and just forgot to tell her. As time passes, she starts to get very, very worried. Speaking very little English, it is difficult for her to communicate. So she contacts her daughter's boyfriend and asks him to help look for Charles and Jennifer. But by 8 p.m., there is still no sign of them, and the police are called. When the children are reported missing, their Mandarin names are used.
The other thing is Charles's Mandarin name, which I believe was more like a nickname, but that's how they knew him, was Wei Wei. And then Jennifer's was Leo Leo. So that's how the guy who reported them missing was the mom's boyfriend. When he showed up, the maternal grandmother who was watching the kids didn't speak English. But she did tell him, because he would stop in every few days to check, make sure the grandma didn't need to go to the store or something. And she told him, no way. And then he started to realize that they hadn't showed up.
We have a copy of the initial news release that went out. It was marked as a local interest story. It says,
Subject, missing persons. Date and time of incident, October 18th, 1989, 1500 hours. Location, 800 Redfield, Reno, Nevada. Victim, Jennifer Chaw. UFJ, 6 years. Charles Chaw, UMJ, 8 years. Suspect, none. Circumstances. Reno police officers responded to 800 Redfield, number 73, on report of two missing juveniles, Jennifer Chaw, 6 years, and Charles Chaw, 8 years. The two juveniles attend Anderson Elementary School and were last seen getting off the school bus in front of the Redfield apartments at approximately 3 p.m. by their schoolmates. The children's grandmother called the police at 8 p.m. when they did not show up at the apartment. The police officers conducted a door-to-door search of the complex and also called Lou Bergarello, who searched the area with a bloodhound. All of the attempts to locate the children were met with negative results. The case is still being investigated at this time. Primary investigator, Officer F. Johnson. Releasing Supervisor, Sergeant Jenny B. Ione.
An article from the Sacramento Bee a few weeks later described the children. Quote, Jennifer was last seen wearing a short-sleeved white dress with black dots, white socks and light green shoes, and carrying a blue tote bag and a Miss Piggy lunch pail. The black-haired youngster has Asian features, is 3 feet 6 inches tall, and weighs 60 pounds. Her two front teeth were missing. Charles, also with black hair, is 4 feet 6 inches tall and weighs 85 pounds. He was wearing a long-sleeved white shirt and a blue pullover, blue jeans and white tennis shoes, and carrying a dark blue and red striped backpack, end quote. The article goes on to quote Anne as saying the following about her children, quote, Charles, he never stop. Good heart. Try to help people. He don't want to stop. He's a good kid. Jennifer, more shy, very quiet. She's a good kid. Somebody take my children. Somebody take all of my heart. End quote. Later in the article, Anne says, quote, Every time the phone rings, I'm so shaky. I think somebody call or my kid call me. End quote. And then ends with, quote, I hope people send two kids back to me. Don't hurt my two kids, please. I don't have anything. I just have two kids. Two kids are all my life. End quote. Alan told us what he's been told about the children over the years while he has been investigating this case. Fun-loving, kind, caring, innocent children. Not getting into mischief. Not disobeying their guardians, just doing what they were told, looking after each other and going to school.
Everybody from back when it happened said that Charles was a very energetic boy, very likable, and he reminded everybody of the Asian boy on Raiders of the Last Ark. I never watched all of them, but I remember seeing the first one. I saw scenes with that boy in it. So I knew right away that's what you could picture, too, was they described his energy and he was funny. And Jennifer was more subdued and she very quiet, but intelligent. And she was going to perform in school better than Charles was, for sure.
This was episode one in our series, The Chaw Children. In episode 2, we will learn more about the police investigation. If you have any information on Charles and Jennifer Chaw, please contact the Reno Police Department. Or if you would prefer to remain anonymous, you can contact us through our website, itsfoulplay.com. Thank you for listening.